You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 195, Thursday, October 9th. For those of you guys joining on the podcast, those of you on the live stream, welcome back. Steve, welcome back to both of us after a relatively long break, as WAF goes. It's been a few weeks. I was out in London. I know you're on paternity leave, just enjoying some playoff baseball out there. We got some action tonight as well, but fantastic to be back. And I know we've also got our too early pitcherless mock draft happening right now. So this definitely feels like kind of the last podcast closing the book on the rearview mirror of 2025. We are going to look at our chalkboard picks from the start of the season, which were our kind of main flag plant targets and fades, and do a little recap there. And then from here on in, we'll be very much looking ahead to the draft landscape, early observations. But this is a fun show too, because we kind of assess what happened and project out a little bit what we think of these guys going forward into next year. So I can't wait, man. It's always a fun show. It's right in the spirit of what Wins Above Fantasy tries to do with the accountability. And yeah, we got to own some losses, and we got some losses to own tonight. As a little spoiler alert, but it's good to be back, man. How's it going over there?
Yeah, it's good. Definitely miss this, miss you, miss talking baseball. For sure the longest break that we had in 5 years in this show?
Five and a half years
of this show?
Yeah, I've never had it. 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. And the last of our self-audit, right? This was kind of the impetus of us doing this and making sure that we touched on some of our calls and predictions, and this was really the first, like, okay, our guys sort of show. It's that, right? It's just our little twist on our guys, that popular topic that, you know, every show and their mother do in the fantasy industry. So fun to get in. Definitely our worst performance, I think, right?
Collectively, no doubt.
Yeah,
but we'll talk about. I think there's some spiritual wins and losses kind of mixed in, but yeah, I hear you. And for those who aren't familiar with the format, every show does have their version of kind of planting a flag. These are our guys. But the way we've done this for 5 years running is, of the names that we say, it's based on March ADP at the time, right before the season starts. And then the rule is, for your targets, they have to finish 20% lower on the Razzball player rater than their ADP. So for instance, a guy with an ADP of 100 would have to finish in the top 80. Or for your fades, it goes the other direction where they have to finish 20% later in terms of the player rater. So, yeah, always fun, Steve, and we'll just have to kind of grit our teeth and get through this. But anything else you wanted to hit on high level before we kind of jump into some of the names here?
No, but I wonder if we should tweak that for next year. You know, we've done this for a while. You know, I don't know. It just doesn't feel right that, like, if you pick a guy with 20 ADP, right, and they finish as a fade, you know, they don't need to finish that far behind that.
Yeah,
right? I get the spirit of it is because, hey, these are the costs, and is it a good investment? But I don't know. Send us an idea, whatever.
Maybe anyone, know, like,
tweet
with
at
an
us.
ADP lower than like 60 and lower, they have to either cut it in half or double.
I don't want to eliminate certain, you know, and we could talk about this offline, not to get into the semantics or the behind the curtain
topic.
But I don't want to, you know, if you really like a guy and his ADP is 15, you know, like we shouldn't cut off that pool, but I think we should just, I don't know, maybe some sort of weighted percentage or something
like
that.
Yeah, make a stop sheet for us.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. We'll cook something up. But
all right. Well, let's get into the names, because we got two targets and two fades each. So we got eight guys to talk about just from mine and Steve's picks. And then also we had PitchCon prize winning guest John Doering, who you know, the unlucky one whose prize was he got to come on and talk with us, but he had a blast. It was fun recording with John, and he had some fantastic arguments. Unfortunately, he also did not do well on the scoreboard here, but it will be great to jump in here. So I will start. We'll kind of bounce back and forth, Steve, but starting with my target and Isak Paredes going back to March was just the guy I wanted to leave every draft with. It was, you know, at the time, the way I put it was that it was the least complex chalkboard pick of all time, because it was all about the ballpark move to Houston with the Crawford boxes and his incredible pull air rate and just approach at the plate. So Paredes had an ADP at the time of 169. He would have had to move to the top 141, which I thought was a certainty, and he finished 310th. That said, he had the injury, the hamstring, that happened in late July, and then it moved to a 60-day IL in August, so it got cut short. And I know for Paredes owners, my brother being one of them, who tried to snipe me with drafting him after he knew my chalkboard pick, they were kind of lamenting about the slow start. I think it took like 20 games before he got his first homer, but he really did start to turn it on. He had 13 homers in May and June and ended up with 20 homers in 102 games. So it's not a terrible pace. If he ended up playing 145, 150 games, he might have eclipsed this. It's tough to say. The power had kind of slowed down a little bit, but the average had picked up. But yeah, I think just like, you know, we can't spend hours on each of these guys, but early thought going into the off season, Steve, is I'll be interested, because Paredes did come back briefly at the end of the year. I'll be interested if the discount is there to kind of buy back in for the same reasons, and maybe this will just kind of suppress the cost in 26 drafts. But quick thoughts on Paredes here. I am 0-for-1.
I think this is a technical loss, and you know, nothing we can do about that. I mean, you know, still did have 20 homers and an OPS above 800, which, you know, if you would have saw just the OPS, you would think it's an easy win. And he was 28% better than league average. It just, he didn't have the volume, and, you know, 53 runs, 53 RBIs isn't going to cut it despite the good rate stats. But I mean, other than that, like, he was Isak Paredes. He pulled a bunch of fly balls, hit a bunch of homers into the Crawford boxes.
The average and, you know, ticked up.
Yeah, the average points ticked up because of that. Like, you know, it was the he improved his ISO by 50 points on last year after that disappointing, why the stock was a little bit low despite the move to Houston, right? Mm-hmm. And the hype behind that. So, yeah, it's a technical loss, but the process was definitely right. And for sure, I will be interested in him again next year. It's just too good of a fit in the ballpark. And I think if you run it back, if he stays healthy, it could definitely be a value next year. But yeah, first one I would say, good process, bad results.
Yeah, I like that. And it'll be interesting, because he would have had to be in the top 140 for this to work out for me. Do you think his ADP next year will be in the top 140?
Maybe around there, maybe 150, 150 to 175, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the rate stats were there. They were there. The process was there. It just, he missed time because of injury.
Okay. Well, we'll keep that in mind as we get into our mock draft, if we like Paredes around 150, 160. Steve, moving over to your first target, it was one I absolutely loved. And I'll kind of tee up the Mike Trout here, because his ADP was 94. You needed him to finish top 75. And it's just hilarious when we say this stuff. You might know where I'm going with it, but it was one of those where we were like, Mike Trout is not going to finish in between 75 and 94. He's either going to be a top, you know, 50 player if he stays on the field, or he's not going to stay on the field and he's going to finish outside the top 300. And he stumped us. So talk to me about what happened with Trout. It's a head scratcher, but I love the pick at the time. It did not hit, as Trout finished 181 on the player radar.
I mean, it kind of was exactly the opposite of what we expected. So this was like bad process, bad results. You know, if you squint, you could see some positive value, right? I mean, he missed. And like, if you'd have told me the, like, I think my logic was, you know, if give me 130, 140 games for Mike Trout, and we got that. We got exactly 130 games, but this was the first year where, like, you saw a true skill decline, right? You know, the K rate was the worst of his career. You know, he lived and was really good in the high 20s. It went to 32%. You know, with that, the average was, you know, for a season in which he's played more than 100 games, you know, 50 points lower than any point in his career, right?
That's tough.
You know, it's tough to see just because I've been such a Mike Trout fan. That said, like, under the hood, there's still a lot to like. I mean, the XBA is 246, but, you know, that just goes to show you got a little bit unlucky, you know, probably in the power department too, with just 60 home runs, despite a 16% barrel rate, an 85th percentile hard hit rate. The bat speed was still really good. But, you know, a decline from the last few years, right? You know, he was at 73% in 2023,
or 76 miles an hour
in 2024, although it was a very small sample in 2024, down to 74 miles an hour, for bat speed for this year. So, you know, I'm torn. I don't think I'll be interested in him next year. It seems like he's this low power, all or nothing type of hitter, just with the K rate at where it is. You know, the swing and miss is, it's not going away. And I don't think it would be safe to, you know, project any improvement as he ages here. You know, maybe there's a swan song season, but I think that the price will still be pretty high just because of the name value. And despite me wanting and trying to will Mike Trout to, like, you know, just stay healthy and, you know, have a season like he'd had in 2022, right? It wasn't that long ago, but I just don't know if it's in the cards. But I mean, that said, hey, he was still 20% better than league average. That's how good Mike Trout is. It seems like Father Time is catching up with him just at a more exponential rate, just because of how many injuries he's suffered and how much swing and miss is now a part of his game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we didn't say it out loud, that the stat line, he hit .232 for batting average, yeah. 26 homers, 73 runs. He had 64 RBI. But like you said, Steve, 130 games, which is hilarious. I listened back to the chalkboard episode and you were like, just give me those two 10-day IL stints, which is exactly what happened.
Yeah, and he missed a month. I mean, it was one IL stint and he missed a month. But
that's right.
You know, it was two 15-day ILs.
That's right. But so it wasn't dismal for Trout, like you said. I think it's just crazy that when you actually look at how it's happening or what the decline is, really he only hit fastballs this past year, and like every other year he's had no problem with, you know, I won't say no problem, but like he did damage on breaking balls off speed. And this year it's just, you know, 21 of his 26 homers came from the fastball.
It was kind of all or nothing too. He still, you know, had a 34% strikeout percentage versus fastballs, .233 BA, batting average, .216 XBA. I mean, yeah, he slugged versus him and had a 51% hard hit rate, but it's not like he was hitting in for average, you know.
True. Yeah. So that was it for Trout. I mean, it's crazy that to find a season where he had a sub 800 OPS, which he was .798, you have to go all the way back to rookie 2011 season. So yeah, maybe Father Time is finally coming here for Trout, but, you know, there might be a little. It depends on how late everything goes, because if his ADP was 94 last year, you got to imagine now this is going to push back to, I don't know, again, the Paredes range. So how about that side by side? I mean, if it were a util, Paredes or Trout?
Despite all of that, I think I would still lean Trout. I don't know. Maybe I'm a victim of that name value there, but I still see a little bit more upside.
Yeah.
In Trout.
I think I'd go Paredes, but I feel like it's okay, close. I think fair. The, I yeah, think oh, that might be a decision sure. we yeah. have to make in March. So, okay, my second target, which was kind of a late call and on brand for me because I kind of like the high floor guys, but Ian Happ was one that I didn't even expect myself as a Cardinals fan to pick. He's just been kind of the hallmark cubby in the past 5-10 years. And Happ, the reason why I chose him for a chalkboard pick, he was going to ADP 122. I needed it to be a top 101, was all around just the stability of runs and RBI and his availability. He had in 2024 coming into this year, he had his best hard hit rate, his best barrel rate. His sprint speed was up. Craig Counsell had all the Cubs running. So I thought everything would kind of take a slight tick up and that would be enough to do it because what he did last year was good enough for like top 60 on the player radar. And this year it was just a very Ian Happ type of season where he finished 120. So almost exactly what you were expecting at that draft price. A 243 average, which was identical to what he did the year before.
Dude, but it's OBP too.
That's right. Yeah. But the 20, yeah, no kidding. 341 OBP and it moved up to 342. But the stolen base is cut in half from 13 down to 6. He just didn't attempt as many, which, you know, wasn't on my bingo card because, you know, the Cubs, I just thought it was like a philosophy thing along with the base paths. Kind of opening up from the rules. So this, there's not that much to go into here. It was just, I was hoping for a slight step forward and he ended up just being the ultimate Ian Happ season. I think he's still just such a steady Eddie outfield option. But maybe we can't like bank on growth. So, don't expect there's much to add here, but any thoughts on Happ, Steve?
I mean, a Happ is a perfect target for like a different version of this game. Like, pick the guy who's going to come the closest to his ADP, right?
So
or like, you know, just. I mean, even his stat lines from, you know, just all around, like he is just consistently like a 115 to 122 in good year WRC plus guys, like, you know, low 20s homers, 9 to 12 ish steals. Like he is just exactly who he is.
It's
he
like
is
a letter a grade. Yeah. It's like when you take a test when you're a kid and you get like an 88 and it's just a B, you know, and it's yeah. like you're an 80, 85 or something. And you're like, oh, it's just a solid B. That's who Happ is, and that's who yeah. he's going to continue to be.
And that's I mean, it's a valuable thing. I mean,
yeah, it's solid.
You could probably, I mean, you know, I don't know if there are any projections up on Fangraphs for next year already. I don't see them, but you know, you could do the back of the napkin projection and get pretty close, probably closer than most for Ian Happ, just based on, you know, looking at the last few years and saying he's a 20 homer, 245, 340, 8 mm-hmm. steal guy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But solid runs and RBI, which is
sure, yeah, is Cubs, Cubs yep. offense is so good. Although, you know, I mean, I guess Tucker was gone for a while, but I the Cubs offense will probably be pretty good.
Yeah, year again. I think so. Yeah. So we are 0-3, and we're moving to 0-4 here, Steve. Back to your second target. This was Austin Riley, who needed to go from ADP 28 down to 22, and Riley finished 316 and had the same amount of games played as Paredes on 102 games. Riley had 16 homers, a 260 average, and 737 OPS. Lightning struck twice for the Braves, but talk to me about what you make of this one and what we make of Riley kind of moving forward.
Yeah, I was big on the Braves bounce back, and that did not happen. Although Olson sort of salvaged his season towards the end. I remember saying I was up in the air between him and Olson, and I think I probably would have pretty close to a win with Olson had I picked him. But yeah, I mean, I just couldn't imagine how it got how it could get worse for Riley, and especially last year because he was turning things around and then got hurt and seemed like he was the player he always was and coming around. But that was clearly not the case. That being said, like, it shouldn't be this bad again, right? Like, the average exit velocity was right in line. The barrel percentage was right in line with 2024, better than 2023 when he was really good. You know, the hard hit was still there. Bat speed still there. Yeah, there's swing and miss, but there's always going to be swing and miss in this game. And I mean, the average was still fine. It just, the power was non-existent. You know, a 12% home run the fly ball rate. I remember looking at that 14% last year saying, you know, it's going to get back to the 20% that he normally is. It got worse. You know, the contact percentage went down a little bit, but it's not like he was chasing much more or swinging much more. You know, it's really hard to explain, and I think I'm going to be in at a heavily discounted Austin Riley. Like, the hard hit rate is still there. The barrel rate is still there. Yeah, the K rate ticked up, but, you know, it wasn't the 32%, like, league-leading strikeout or close to league-leading strikeout percentage that we saw for Trout.
Right.
So I really find it hard to believe that, I don't know. Will it strike again? And is this just who Riley is now that he's like sort of out of his, you know, coming close to the 30 just because he's 29? I don't know. I still see a guy who could potentially hit 30 homers with a decent average in what should be a good lineup. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just giving too much credit into the years from 2021 to 2023 with Riley. Amazing that he finished 316, especially since he's like, you know, Austin 316. Shout out to Stone Cold there for all the wrestling fans. So pretty fitting that his bad year was 316th ranked.
That's funny. It's interesting because if you remember, you know, early days for Austin Riley when he came up, this was kind of the naysayers' argument that he was a little bit of a hacker at the dish. And then he worked on the plate discipline. It got a little better. And in his better years, he was like a Terminator on off-speed pitches, like hitting well over 300, you know, a couple seasons where he slugged over 600 on off-speed. And this past season, it was kind of what we said with Trout, that like most of the damage, or at least most of the batting average, came against fastballs. So I don't know if he, as well as the rest of that clubhouse, are just like pressing to try to get out of this funk, but you can't tell me that the skills, when you look at all the stuff under the hood, like you said, Steve, like the quality of contact when he does make contact, and he's 29 years old. Like, this is going to be a value if it dips to...
This decline should not happen this quickly.
It should not.
Like, it was a volatile profile, and like you said, you know, he did need to work to get the strikeout rate down. It was like, you know, when he had that, you know, impressive rookie season, and when he hit 18 homers in 80 games and had an astronomical strikeout rate, and then improved that surprisingly, you know. I just don't see the regression hitting this hard this quick for him. And I'm going to be tempted to be in. Like, he's still, like, he's buried on our ADP sheet for the mock draft, right? Like,
yeah,
I know we took Devers as a first baseman. We'll get into the draft, I'm sure, on a future episode. I was like, he's not labeled as a first baseman. So I was scrolling through and seeing like, oh, you know, we need a first baseman just because I'm dumb and didn't realize that we had Devers there. But Riley was like a guy that, you know, if you miss on first baseman, talk about upside for someone that's going to go pretty late at a position that's top heavy. So,
Thought, just looking at kind of where his season broke down, two IL stints for the abdominal muscle, and then he missed the rest of the season. And if you look at his splits pre All-Star break, a 274 average and a 765 OPS. So, respectable. And then, I mean, obviously the 765 is lower than what you count on from Riley, but
disappointing.
Yeah. But then after the All-Star break, just in that small slice of time, it was a 108, you know, he went 4 for 37 in that time. So maybe he was just trying to play through that. But yeah, overall, I'm with you that Riley feels like a buy the dip type of candidate. So those are our targets. We will take a turn to negative town with our fades. But the positive side is we at least got a couple right. But we're going to take our first ad break and be right back after this. All right, so jumping into the fades, Steve. No win yet. We are now 0 for 5 collectively. I had Luis Castillo, and he was at an ADP of 111, so needed to move outside of the top 133. And he finished 127 on the player rater, so that is close but no cigar. The reasoning going into this season for Luis Castillo that I was concerned about, and I think you shared some of the concerns, is the swing and miss stuff. The velocity has all been on a decline that just doesn't really pair well with, you know, I know he's only 32, but also he's got a lot of mileage, and he's kind of reinvented himself a couple times as a pitcher, and the swing and miss and the strikeout numbers have gone down and down. And what we said coming into this year, and you kind of, you know, agreed, parlayed with when I brought this up, that this might be the first season that we see him well under a strikeout per inning. And that's what we saw, 180 innings pitched for Castillo and 162 on the strikeout total. The whip at 118 is not helping you. I think where Castillo barely kind of snuck in at the passable mark is the 354 ERA. His xERA beneath that was over 4. So yeah, by all accounts, it wasn't a disaster for Castillo, but it wasn't what a lot of the pitchers around him were offering. Like I know personally, I was in more on like Logan Webb in this range, and he ended up having a nice season after a slow start. There were a lot of guys that we liked at that 100 mark, and Castillo just felt like one that the arrow was pointing down, and I think it did. So this is a slight, you know, squinting here, but a slight spiritual victory. But overall, it wasn't a disaster for Castillo. I think I'm still in the same camp that I'm not going to be targeting him just because this is an area of the draft that I look for a breakout.
Yeah.
But yeah, what are your thoughts?
I mean, this year just gave you more reason to be out the next year, despite the decent results, right? Like, yeah, the 354 ERA was good. The 118 whip was also fine. But you know, the underlying numbers are just not there. And I mean, he kind of got by with just a 21% strikeout rate, 22% strikeout rate because he pitched 180 innings, right? He got there with the volume, got you the 11 wins, the Mariners were good. So that definitely helped obviously. Right.
Yep.
And you know, the walk rate was still good for Luis Castillo. So there was definitely some positive to that. But yeah, the swing and miss is just continually to steadily decline, and more reason for me not to
is his best whiff pitch anymore? I guess a slider, which is maybe just above average on swing and miss. But yeah, I mean,
yeah, slider's still at 36% whiff, but that for a slider, that's probably close to average, right?
Yeah,
most sliders do have. And he still gets good swing and miss on the fastball at 26%.
Yeah, that's true. That's a pretty good floor, but at just sitting 95 with no real extension. I guess that is, it's down from 95.6, which was what it was last year. So, yeah, I think the arrow is still pointing down on Castillo. But
I don't know. Maybe he still has like a few like old man pitcher years just because he has so many pitches and, you know, has been doing this for so long and like can kind of salvage his way to respectable years despite middling underlying numbers.
Yep, I think that's spot on. Steve, finally we got one that is a hit by the book.
Is it though?
But spiritual, this one might be on the other side. Yeah, Marte, which was a polarizing one at the time. Talk about kind of why you picked Marte and what you made of his season.
How can a guy who hit 283, 376, 517 with 893 OPS, 145 WRC plus, 28 homers,
be a successful fade?
a successful fade. you know, this is sort of kind of why I was alluding to some of the rule tweaks that we may need to have. I mean, he finished 80th overall on the ADP or on the Razzball Player Rater. You had to pay a 29th overall pick, which, you know, by the numbers wasn't worth it, but it kind of was just because second base is so bad. But I mean, exactly what my concerns sort of were. Like, I believed in the rates. I believed in the skills. The volume was just a concern for me. And, you know, he did only play 126 games. So, you know, I think nowadays where you for older players, especially, and for guys who are, and I hate this term, but injury prone, or you kind of should bake in an IL stint anyway, right? I mean, he played 10 more games last year and hit 8 more homers, right?
Yeah.
And had, you know, 6 more RBIs or 6 more runs, 23 more RBIs. So, you know, definitely was better on a rate basis last year. And that was kind of my point, is that there's no way he's keeping up those rates. And he didn't, but they were still really good. And you still got good value in 126.
Yeah. Let me push back a little bit here, Steve, because you did bring up the durability as a question mark, but I do, just from listening to it this morning, just to freshen up, you were kind of in the camp of who he was in 2024 is not the player that he is overall. Like you were saying, I still think he's a really good player, but maybe like 25 homer guy. And I do think it's, you know, when you look at 126 games and 28 homers, like, he kind of maintained the crazy savant sliders that he's never had.
I think the big thing for me was that he had a 12.3% barrel rate and was a career 9%. He improved the barrel rate this year. Sure, so the hard hit went down a little bit. So,
That's what I'm asking is, do you think now that you've seen it 2 years in a row, because he's this kind of late 31-year-old, I guess you could call it a breakout in a certain way, are you kind of buying that this new Ketel Marte of the past 2 years is the player, is the skill set? If health,
in my mind, depends. On a 162 game basis, he is a 35 homer hitter.
Okay. That's a pretty, I mean, I guess.
Yeah, that's really good.
It is really good. And I know we were talking in our mock, we were like, oh, do we consider Ketel in the second round?
We did, so right? Yeah. I was fine with that pick, yeah.
I do think the hard part is, though, like, when you look at the entire, like, these aren't one-off durability things, right? Like,
no.
The one-off is that he played 150 games in 2023.
Yeah.
You got to go back to 2019 to find the last time he had 140. And that's kind of, you know, setting the bar because he's been high 130s a couple times. But the point is, you probably got to bake in 25 games missed for Marte. And if you can live with that, you know, and what was the speed this year? Like, what did he do?
He had 4 steals. I mean, he had 7 the year before. Like,
he's just kind of
he's like a 5. Yeah, you pencil him for 5 sort of thing.
So this is kind of like, well, I guess Vlad is more durable. I was going to say, what is this like? A little bit of a Vlad at second base type of thing.
Yeah.
In terms of the back of the baseball card.
Which is really good. really good.
It is. Yeah. Okay. So that's Marte, but we're finally on the board with a technical victory. Yeah. Okay.
Have a better win coming
my
up.
My next
so
one
that's fine.
Is my first and only win. So I went 1-for-4 this year. And it was fading CJ Abrams, which Abrams had a 48 ADP. He needed to finish outside of 58, and he finished 76, which doesn't seem like an implosion. But I am proud of the logic here, Steve, because I think it's the inverse of Ian Happ, where I remember going into picking Abrams for this game and thinking to myself, well, you know what? He had 20 homers and 31 steals, and he had a .246 average. By all accounts, like, when you look at those for CJ Abrams, you're like, oh man, like, that's a pretty solid season. And I think, I don't have it right in front of me, but the Razzball Player Rater from that season that he had was in like the 80s or something. You know, it kind of goes to show, like, you have to go to runs and RBIs, where he had 79 runs coming into this season, but he had just 65 RBIs. And when you look at the guys that are going around pick 50, a lot of those guys have like 160, you know, some even have 170 runs plus RBIs.
What you want, like 160 to 175 is in that area.
Exactly.
Right?
And this is a guy that is just like perennially around like 150. And so that was my logic with this pick, is that I thought Abrams would still put up some of those, you know, sexier fantasy stats of like, oh, I'll have some homers, I'll have some speed. And honestly, I didn't even count on his average going up 11 points, where he had a 257 average. He had 19 homers this year, 31 steals. Again, you look at that and you're like, that's a great season. But then you're stuck at 150 runs and RBIs. And again, that put him at a 76 on the player rater. So it's not to say that, you know, I'm permanently out on Abrams, but I do think that when we get around March, these guys who have the power speed combo, the last stats you're looking at are the runs and RBI total. So I think it's kind of a reminder when you look at the player rater that that stuff adds up in a hurry. So it makes guys like, you know, say a Suzuki, you know, when you look and see a low steal total and you're like, well, he's not going to hit 35 homers and he's not going to steal double digits. It's like, but he's going to get 170, you know, runs and RBIs. So, so anyway,
that's, it's not a consideration. We rightfully are impressed at 30, you know, 60 homers and steals, right? We aren't as impressed at 100 or 200 homers and runs and RBIs. I get, you know, so much of is depending on situation, which is why we aren't, and it's not as predictable, but there is something to be said about it for guys that have a track record of doing it, you know?
For sure.
So, yeah, I mean, he's still just 24 years old. Abrams is, he only played 144 games. I think he battled a shoulder injury at the end of the year. I don't know if he had an IL stint. And, you know, I mean, the runs were there, 92 runs, 60 RBIs. You know, I guess that's kind of expected for a guy that, you know, leads off most of the time, right? He batted first or second basically all year. He played, you know, a few times at three in the order. But, you know, I guess until the Nationals, like, their rebuild comes to fruition, that's when Abrams can then, I think, take the step up that he's probably projected for as a guy that has great homer and power and speed combination, right? Like, that'll be the year that he can get like 115 runs and 70 RBIs, 75 RBIs, and, you know, 20 homers and 30 steals would then carry a lot more weight on on a really good Nationals team, right? But I don't know if that's happening. You know, they were supposed to take a step this year and they didn't. That's probably why Abrams didn't finish higher, right? Because the Nationals were totally disappointing as a team.
I think that's fair, but to literally like side by side compare it, I think it comes down to price, because Abrams, if you look at Abrams and Suzuki, like going into this season, Abrams' ADP was 48, Suzuki was 81.
Yeah.
So 30 picks and change behind, and Suzuki finished two spots ahead of him on the player rater. His batting average was 11 points lower. He had the 32 homers, which is great, just five steals. But then you look at the runs and RBIs, and Suzuki had 178 versus 152. So it's like those sleepy stats just do make an impact. And I think you don't get the draft day tax on those stats like you do steals. But it is team build or roster construction dependent. So anyway, yeah, good discussion, and I do like Abrams as a player, but I think you're right that the Nats got to take a real step forward before his runs turn into, like, 100, and then we're talking. So, Steve, let's go to your next fade. We're better at the fades than the targets, it looks like.
We are, and I think we've always been slightly better at the fades.
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit easier to say our don't draft
than,
list. But
than the target. But
Roky Sasaki was one that, you know, everyone was so hype on, and then people started to get nervous about, but you rightfully called this fade, even though it was kind of a shortened season. But talk about Sasaki and maybe what we think of him in the many years ahead.
Yeah. A lot of what I said was that I like him long-term. I was very interested in Yamamoto the year before. That, you know, that even in a sense sort of took a year, right? Like Yamamoto's year was pretty good in 2024. He really broke out this year. And like, you know, if Paul Skeens didn't exist, he may have been the Cy Young.
Yeah.
And my logic around Sasaki was a little bit of the same, but I think he just was a little bit more raw coming over, right? There were some, you know, injury concerns and rumblings even when the Dodgers were signing him. And there was just some slight under the hood type of things going on with the metrics, whereas, like, you know, his K minus BB was slowly declining from 2021 to 2024. And, you know, the fact that he didn't have a true breaking pitch and was so reliant on that splitter, and there were some velocity concerns, right? So that just gave me some hesitation, as opposed to someone that, you know, some of these guys that come over like a Senga, like a Yamamoto, that I'm more eager to jump in on. Shota Imanaga, mm-hmm. Who was more of a finished product. Like, Sasaki just seemed like more of a project, and he kind of is. Yeah. It's funny enough that in the playoffs, it looks like he's carving out a role and, like, got named to be the Dodgers closer and looks really good in that role. Interested to see if that's going to be something that carries over. I don't think so.
Interesting.
He's finally finding success and, you know, maybe can build on that, have a healthy offseason. And I still think the sky is the limit for Sasaki, just with, you know, the raw tools that he has, the success he had in Japan at such a young age. And, you know, see that velocity tick up at a breaking pitch, and he's probably someone that could take off here. But had my concerns, and those came to fruition. He basically really didn't pitch much, so there's not much to talk about stat wise, right? It was only 36 innings, so you can't really take too much from that.
But the command was, like, so hard to watch. He wasn't ready mentally.
No. And just, like, watching him, like, even just beyond the numbers, like, he just did not seem poised. But that being said, in this new role, like, he does have that poise and looks good, and it's closing out intense playoff games and coming in with runners on second and third
to close out the
Phillies. Yeah. So, you know, that could do a lot. I know we talk about the numbers here and all that. That's the basis of the show, but to be able to build on that, I think, is invaluable for someone as young and as talented as Sasaki heading into 2026.
Yeah, not to put you on the spot, but I feel like you'd come up with some throughout the rest of the show. I'm trying to think of similar, like, young, just absolute, like, gas arms that have a playoff relief role and then make, like, for the Cardinals, what comes to mind is, like, a Carlos Martinez of, like, starter and
didn't Waka do that too? Didn't Waka have
That's another one. That's a good call.
I mean, this was way back in the day and he stayed a closer, but, like, K-Rod, right?
Playoff run. But yeah, I feel like four guys who kind of come and bullpen heroes, and then, you know, it's huge for the confidence. So it'll be cool to see Sasaki.
I'm sure we're missing some guys too. That can't come to mind, like, you know, some black aces that came in the playoffs and were electric out of the bullpen that were good long term starters. I'm sure I'll try and think of some as we
continue. Wrap up. Well, we got an ad break, and then we'll get to John's targets and fades as well. So he's not here to defend himself, but we can walk through those. We'll take our second ad break. We'll be right back after this. All right. So John had some compelling arguments. Like I said, he put together a great rundown.
Prepared, yeah.
Very prepared, easily our most prepared PitchCon guest, with no offense to others in the past, but John was strapped and came in with Jonathan India as his first target. It was a take that we did not hate, Steve. I think the new environment with Kansas City, he had talked about how it's kind of an underrated ballpark for hitters in terms of batting average. And really, we thought that the runs total with him presumably leading off would be where he kind of makes up a lot of ground here. But unfortunately, it ended up not being a good season for India at all. A 233 average was the lowest of his career. A 669 OPS was by far the lowest of his career. And yeah, he just never really got going. Nine home runs, a career low as well. And zero activity on the base path. So not a single steal, got caught stealing four times. Kind of everything that did go wrong for the 28-year-old in India. And he finished, I mean, it was a deep shot. So he would have had
the cost of investment. Again, you know, we need to weight this sort of stuff.
It was like ADP 240 or something.
Yeah,
that had to break
it,
the top 200.
Impact, yeah, if you took Jonathan and you just moved on, you know,
yeah,
it's not a big
you
deal.
Really did.
Whereas if you took some of the guys that we recommended, it, you know, Austin Riley,
little more to it for sure.
Yeah, a little bit more painful there, but good process. I mean, you know, I remember talking with John, being excited that he was leading off a bunch around, you know, opening day. And he kind of, it was just like, you know, just do what you do on a rate basis going forward and it'll be really good. But yeah, I mean, zero steals after, you know, being 27 of 31 over the last 2 years is kind of sad and surprising. And then just, you know, just a downturn all across the board, basically, as far as the surface stats and back to baseball and underlying stuff too. So, you know, good thought, just didn't work out.
Yeah. And his other target is just bad luck and Ronaldo Lopez. Yeah. I think that's the giant question mark. He did bring up some some good points with Raylo, because a ton of people were quick to write off, obviously, the sub 2 ERA and a fantastic 2024 as a reliever turned starter. And one thing John brought up is that he is a Braves fan. He watched all the games and he said what doesn't show up on the stat sheet, and people are quick to say Lopez got lucky with a high left on base rate, is he completely changed his pitch mix approach when there were guys on base and like his actual movements to the plate, which you'd kind of expect, but he was just a big believer. So I still will be watching Lopez. Yeah. I wasn't like fully out and he should be back next year, right? Because what was it? It was a shoulder, but
shoulder.
I don't think it was anything related
major
surgery. Yeah. Moving to
surgery that would leave him out for the year. I do want to mention, John did mention to me off air, his other pick for this, and he regretted it, you know, once Lopez went down in like spring training. And we did record with him earlier, right? And he would have changed his head had we had that news. His other pick was Chris Bubich, who would have been a, you know, definite win there.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. Yeah, that's a good shout.
Note that for the record.
Yeah, there you go. Now, going to his fades, he had Willy Adames. And it's kind of ironic because one of the big points, I mean, he brought up a lot of good points, but one of the points was talking about pressing in a new environment, which maybe was a thing for India, just with how slow he started. But for Adames, we got to tip a cap, because this is the 30 homer Giants season that we've been waiting on.
First one
since
Bonds,
Barry,
right?
Bonds. Just in at 30 homers, 87 RBIs, 94 runs. So there's
he got it on the last day of the season. They batted him lead off too, which was,
oh, did he? I missed that. Highlight. That would be a good one to watch. The average did fall back to 225 from what was 251 the year before. I think Adames kind of proved that, you know, even the speed, it wasn't the 21 steals, but I know there was talks that John had about how the Giants were like close to dead last on stolen bases, and that, you know, a guy like Matt Chapman was kind of the exception where he had some good steals years. But 12 is serviceable, and the 30 homers is great. And then I think the overall counting stats of the 87 RBIs, the 94 runs is, I mean, those are top 15 in the NL, right? So he had a really solid year. Age 30, I think we're still scared of kind of this profile with the high strikeout rate and not the best lineup context, although with Devers, it definitely looked better. Yeah, curious your thoughts, Steve, on Adames moving forward. And on the player rater, just to tie a bow on it, he finished 78, so kind of right around the ADP, exactly the ADP that you got him at, which is funny, but he would have had to drop for this to hit for John. But what do you think on Adames next year, Steve?
I think good process here, right? Like, there was a lot, like, you know, the 21 steals, that's an outlier, and, you know, he did that in the contract year. You know, I think that it still was impressive that he got 12, considering his career high before the 21, 22, and 2024 was 8. So, you know, he still did run a little bit more. That definitely added to his value and hurt John there. The fact that, you know, he had 93 runs and 112 RBIs the year before, that's easy to regress, right? He still had 94. He had more runs. Did have, you know, the 25 or so less RBIs, right? So definitely had some regression there, right? The BABIP was 297 the year before, you know, easy to regress that, and it did fall back down. You know, he is seemingly a 220 to 230 hitter, and the 251 from the year before was an outlier, so, you know, check there. But, you know, he salvaged the season with the home runs, the probably more steals and a good runs and RBIs. But, you know, it was definitely worse than his contract year in Milwaukee in 2024, but not that much worse, right? So, you know, did hit the ball harder and still barrel the ball at a good rate. So I think that Adames is, I would project him for somewhat similar to what he did this year, and that's a pretty good player and useful fantasy player for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So that's Adames, and then last one was a fade on Logan Webb, which
Did you guys have like a board bet on that or something, right? Because you were a big Logan Webb guy.
Actually, I ran out of time listening this morning. But we might have had something there because I was big on Webb. But yeah, Webb put in after, again, I'll pull up splits, but I feel like it was a pretty shaky. Well, maybe it's just the first outing or two, because then he did right the ship straight away. But yeah, on the season, Webb had, you know, the volume, which is what I was. My biggest argument for Webb is everyone's like, oh, 180 innings is a new 200. Well, he still gets 200 innings in his sleep. So it's kind of like where we used to be with Sandy Alcantara, that, you know, the strikeout per inning isn't that great, but then you look up and he's got 224 strikeouts on the year, and it's just over a strikeout per inning, but it's still elite from a total standpoint. I always feel like the ground ball rate is just such a high floor for him, and the walk rate as well, and those things just stayed true. I mean, it was more of the same from Webb. It's like sub 6 walk rate. He's still 28 years old. The ground ball rate is always amongst the best in the league. So I think that, for 2 years in a row, the WHIP actually hurt you. And I think that's kind of what, John was bringing up, is like, you know, if there's some regression,
it still kind of hurt you in a sense this year, right? Like 124.
Oh yeah, it did. The WHIP hurt, but then you have a 3.22 ERA, all those strikeouts, 15 wins is impressive with the Giants. But I mean, he's just, you know, an innings eater that is extremely high floor, is like an SP2 pseudo SP1 type of mold.
Yeah. The volume with 26% strikeout rate is just, you know, that's what gives a lot of value. There's things to poke holes in, right? And I know John was big on his home road splits. I'm pulling those up now, but
The K rate did take a step forward too.
From
20% up to 26%.
And with that volume, that's huge, you know.
Yeah,
get a 26% strikeout rate with 208 innings or whatever it was is
for sure. The change up took a big step forward on swing and miss stuff, and on just batting average, slug. Like the change up was the story of the improvement for Webb this year from a strikeout.
He had 222 strikeouts It's so funny. I like how do you, whoever looks at like strikeout totals anymore, like was that, that had to be the most strikeouts, just raw number in the league. In
yeah, let's check right? it out. Man, it's so hard to just find actual statistics these days. Strikeout leaders.
Yeah.
Here's our good radio here. MLB strikeout leaders. So
he was third. So it was, okay. But he was first in the National League. So Crochet had 255. Skubal had 241. Webb had 224. Luzardo was right behind him at 216. Skeens also had 216. So.
Yeah, so he's ahead of Paul Skeens, which
yeah.
is like...
It would, and just raw strikeouts? Yes. He had more raw strikeouts than Paul Skeens.
What do you think the chances are he has more strikeouts than Paul Skeens next year? Because the question almost sounds ridiculous. You know what I mean? Yeah. But that's kind of the Logan Webb experience.
Yeah. I mean, because you know, Skeens on a rate basis was, you know, 4% better than him, right? 3% mm-hmm. better than him. So, I mean, just rank wise, Skeens was fourth in strikeout rate. Webb was 15th. He was 3.3% better than him. So, I mean, it can't be too bad because, or you know, too much in favor of Skeens just because the volume is there, right? Like although I guess, you know, Webb would need to basically carry a 26% again and throw 200 innings. I think it's more likely that it has like a 22, 23, 24%. And then,
yeah,
then Skeens probably takes them all over just because of the rates. Right. So, yeah. I would lean Skeens, but not like a 2-1, maybe, you know.
Yeah, maybe just looking at like these just surface stat leaderboards, one of the biggest surprises to me when it comes to like volume versus strikeouts versus ratios is that on the innings leaders where Webb was first in the league with 207, the fact that, where was it here? I just lost it. Hold on.
What were you looking for? Innings pitch leaders?
Yeah, but going on overall, like what was Crochet's?
Crochet had 205 innings last year.
That's shocking to me. I don't know why that just disappeared right in front of me. But yeah, Crochet having 205.
Yeah,
is
yeah, I mean, that was probably the one concern that everyone had about Crochet. You know, he's only done it 1 year. How many innings is he going to go? He went. They shut him down towards the end of last year already on 146. No problem. AL innings pitch leader.
Yeah.
No one knows anything when it comes
right.
to
and then Christopher Sanchez at 202. Yeah, man. That was
another guy that had probably some slight innings concerns, right?
Man, I don't know how he didn't land on my chalkboard. I had him in every
You've been with the Christopher Sanchez guys forever.
Gosh,
yeah.
I'm guessing wrong. At least I didn't pick Tyler Fitzgerald. all right. Well, Steve, that rounds us out. Any closing thoughts here? I'm excited to look forward in the next ones because we'll have our pitcherless mock, kind of the full landscape observations, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, we're in the sixth round, so I know we may record a little bit earlier for a show in advance, but we'll see how far we are. But we got some fun stuff planned. I know we sort of teased some all-star team or some slight recaps, but definitely excited to start breaking it down and looking ahead.
Yeah, well, we will be on an every other week cadence from here, guys, in the off season, at least until we get close to prime draft season. So you guys can, I think we're recording live next Wednesday, and then the podcast will be out the following Thursday. So, yeah, our next drop will be October
23rd. Evergreen topics there, at least for now.
Yeah.
In the off season, so.
It is. We can get away with it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, guys, thank you for joining us. Steve, it was great being back. But that signs us out for episode 195. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys.